Hi, this is Cynthia Lummis. Welcome to our Teletown Hall in Washington, D.C. So pleased to have you on the line this evening. If you are watching Monday Night Football, I apologize for scheduling this Teletown Hall during the game, but already Green Bay is getting a pretty good lead over the Vikings. So we'll update you during the call, or you can just mute your television and listen to the town hall as you watch the game. Anyway, we're delighted to have you here on the call with us. Last week, the United States debt passed the output of the entire economy. It passed our GDP, which has all of us tremendously concerned. And so we're going to be talking tonight about spending, the debt, the deficit, about jobs, and we're going to be talking about a balanced budget amendment. We have a poll question tonight because Congress will be voting on a balanced budget amendment. So we would like you to press zero to ask a question, and then also during the course of the conversation, we'll ask our question that we're polling on, do you support a balanced budget amendment to the U.S. Constitution? And then we will report those results before the end of the call. Again, this is Cynthia Lummis. Thanks for joining us, and please press zero now to ask a question. I was home in Wyoming last week, had a chance to spend time in Douglas, Casper, Buffalo, Sheridan, and Cheyenne, and Laramie, and talked to a lot of people who are concerned about the spending in Washington, concerned about some of the global issues, including Greece, Italy, Spain, and Ireland, and the issues that they're dealing with and how they'll affect our economy. So we'd love to hear from you on those issues tonight, as well as some issues closer to home. There's some concerns about what the Forest Service is doing with regard to water rights that ski areas and ranchers hold on federal lands. There's going to be a hearing on that subject tomorrow here in Washington in front of the Natural Resources Committee. So there are any number of things going on. Now, let me tell you a little bit about the schedule for the remainder of the year. We will be voting this week, I believe, on a balanced budget amendment to the U.S. Constitution. We'll also be voting to extend the continuing resolution that is running the government. So we'll extend that into December. By November 23rd, we also know we'll have a report from the so-called super committee, the six members of the House, six members of the Senate, bipartisan bicameral group that's trying to come up with at least $1.2 trillion in spending reductions over the next 10 years, and hoping they'll come up with an even bigger number. Over the Thanksgiving holiday, the Congressional Budget Office will be determining or scoring whether those savings are actually achieved by the Deficit Commission's recommendations. And then Congress will have to act on those recommendations by the 23rd of December. Now, we've been told as members of Congress not to book our flights home for Christmas until the last flight out on December 23rd, anticipating that we will be working through the entire month of December. Now I'd like to turn to our first caller, Patty from Casper. You're on the line, and how's it going tonight in Casper?
Oh, it's just fine in Casper, windy as heck. What I'm wondering about is these regulations that have been imposed on the oil and gas industry, ergo, you know, the not being able to drill in the Gulf or ANWR, or even the regulations, and now I read in the paper about the increase in leases for drilling here, in even in our state. Is there anything that can be done about these executive orders that Obama keeps imposing on us?
Well, thanks for the question, and I share your concern. Part of what we'll be doing tomorrow in hearings in the Natural Resources Committee is hearing from groups that are impacted by the actions of these federal agencies over which Congress does not have control. Now, with regard to the Forest Service regulations that I was visiting about at the beginning of this call, a letter that a number of members of Congress signed got the Forest Service to delay their implementation of this rule until we can have this hearing and have a little more input into it. We are trying to do that with a large number of regulations that the Obama administration is implementing, but quite frankly, it's like a tsunami of regulations back here. We have received and stacked one on top of each other all of the federal regulations that have passed this year so far, and clearly we've got a month and a half left to go in the year, and we have a stack almost 10 feet tall so far. So keeping track of, it's just a stunner. Completely out of control. I would argue that we need a moratorium on regulations. And in fact, the House has passed a bill that would enact a moratorium, and the Senate has not acted on that bill. That's a source of great frustration between the House and the Senate. We have sent over 20 bills now to the Senate that would create jobs, none of which has been enacted by the Senate. Its leader, Harry Reid, is holding things up. That's part of the frustration you see between the House and the Senate right now. Thanks for your question, Patty, and I share your frustration about the administration and its regulatory regimes. They're holding down jobs. And, of course, many of you saw over the weekend that the Keystone Pipeline that was scheduled to bring oil from Canada down to the Gulf of Mexico will not be built until after the election. That a blatant political decision that will cost this country 20,000 jobs at a time when we desperately need those jobs. And, of course, those are livable wage jobs, good jobs in our country. Now we'll be visiting with Bruce from Casper. Hey, Bruce.
Yes. My question to you is more along the lines of the poorer people. What I was curious about is what you might think or might do to get rid of the illegal aliens that we have so many of here in America at the present time, because I firmly believe that they are holding down jobs at a very, very low wage, illegally, of course, and because of that, the people with money don't have to pay a decent wage for people to be working those jobs. I know when I got out of high school, I was, my own fault, didn't go to college. But at this, that time back in 44, the people did pay me enough of a wage that I was able to purchase a house that I live in. And I just think that if we got rid of the illegal aliens, the people would have to pay a decent wage to people. I supplement my Social Security buying and selling antiques, and I see so many people lately that are really desperate for money, and they would work, and some of them are working two and three jobs to make enough money to live on, and the people who own those businesses are just wallowing in money. What's your thoughts about the illegal aliens?
Well, thanks, Bruce, for your question. I do think that we need to institute E-Verify. That is a reliable way for businesses to verify the legal status of the people that are applying for work. Now, we may need to make sure that E-Verify is workable for small businesses, and as you know, that's the most important employer in Wyoming is small business. Now, the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee is a gentleman from Texas by the name of Lamar Smith, and he has a bill in the House Judiciary Committee to address some of these issues, especially with regard to E-Verify. Now, they're working the kinks out of that bill right now, but I'm hopeful we will see that bill either later this year or sometime early next year. That way, employers can know that they're hiring legals, and employers can be held accountable for the people that they hire as well. I think that would help with some of the problems you've discussed tonight, including the wages that are paid and the opportunity to provide badly needed jobs to legal American citizens or people legally in this country. By the same token, we need to expand legal immigration at the same time we're cracking down on illegal immigration. And we'll be working closely with Congressman Smith to see that some of those issues are addressed in his bill as well. So thanks, Bruce, for your question. Now I'd like to remind you to press zero to ask the question and also to raise tonight's polling question. We would like to know from you, do you support a balanced budget amendment to the U.S. Constitution? If you do support a balanced budget amendment to the U.S. Constitution, please press 1. And if you do not support a balanced budget amendment to the U.S. Constitution, please press 2. We will be reporting the results of that poll later in our call. So please press 0, though, to ask a question, and we will be going next to Jim from Jackson. Jim, you're on the line.
Hello, Congresswoman?
Yeah, good evening.
Hi. I was wondering what you thought about abolishing the income tax and switching to a national sales tax, in the sense that the only way we're really going to get and combine it with a balanced budget amendment, the only way we're really going to solve this issue is to get the bottom 54% who pay nothing at all to have some skin in the game as well. And I think the only way you can politically make that happen is to go to a simplified system, which is just simply a national sales tax that no one can cheat on.
Well, thanks for the question. I generally favor a flat tax, a flat income tax, which would require begin to get at some of those 54%, as you mentioned, who do not pay any income tax now. As they become the majority of non-taxpayers, the incentive is for them to exercise their majority to make fewer and fewer people pay more and more of the taxes in the U.S. So I agree with you that that is a important problem that we need to address. Now, I tend to support addressing it through a flat tax, which is a single tax rate, eliminating most or if not all deductions and credits, perhaps exempting the first 20,000 of income, so those that are truly financially in dire straits aren't paying on that first 20,000 in income, and then above 20,000, everybody pays the same flat percentage of their income regardless of how big it is. And so, of course, the wealthy would pay more. In fact, they would be less able, I believe, to receive some of the tax advantages that sometimes large businesses lobby for and receive here in Washington that small businesses don't get. So I tend to lean more towards a flat tax, but I admire the fair tax proponents. One of the biggest fair tax proponents I know is a fellow individual from Jackson who you may know, Foster Fries, and he provides a lot of good fodder in terms of briefing materials and books that he has distributed to promote a fair tax, which is, as you point out, more of a national sales tax rather than a value-added tax. Now, I like the sales tax approach better than the value-added approach because a sales tax is transparent. You can see it on every transaction, everything you consume or purchase. Whereas a value-added tax, like they have in a lot of European countries, is a hidden tax that is built into the price of the good, to which a sales tax is also later applied by the states. So that's sort of where I shake out on that issue, and thanks a lot, Jim, for your comments. All right, our next caller is not on the line yet, so we will ask that you press zero to ask a question, and also make sure that you are voting on our poll question. Do you support a balanced budget amendment to the U.S. Constitution? Press 1 for yes or 2 for no. Okay, our next question comes from Nancy in Casper. Nancy, you are on the line. Oh, Nancy, it seems that we lost you, so we'll go on to another caller. We are now a little over almost 5,000 people on the line, so I'm hopeful that the next person in the queue will oh, good, we have one. Bob from Cowley. How are things in Cowley tonight, Bob?
Well, not bad. Moderate temperature. My question is, what do we need to do about this Fast and Furious? I'm hoping that everyone will sink their teeth into this thing and not let it go. Richard Nixon's cover-up was just small potatoes compared to this.
You know, you are so right. This is a nightmare. Now, let me tell you what I know about it. 2,000 weapons, including AK-47s and 50 caliber weapons, were sold into Mexico. Only 2 of the 2,000 had tracking devices on them. So no wonder the Mexican government and the people of northern Mexico believed that they were under attack, that they were in the middle of a civil war. We leaked enough weapons, of huge caliber weapons, into northern Mexico for them to believe that they were literally under siege, and it was our own government's fault. Now, many hearings continue here on Capitol Hill in both the House and the Senate to try to uncover more information about this. We know that 2 weapons were found near the body of our own border security patrolman who was killed, and that those weapons were sourced to the Fast and Furious operation. We also know that over 140 Mexicans were killed by these weapons. It's shocking how this could happen. And Eric Holder needs to be held accountable. I believe Eric Holder should resign. But as long as he's there, subpoenas will continue to be issued. His staff will be brought in before Congress for hearings, and hopefully we'll uncover more about what was known by whom in the Justice Department, and how this type of absurd operation could be allowed to proceed at the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms with the knowledge of the U.S. Department of Justice. So thanks, Bob. I appreciate your call. Now, next on the line, we have Nancy from Casper. Nancy, are you there?
I am here. I guess I got cut off last time. My question originally was about the regulations that you had mentioned earlier. You had mentioned that you had like a stack of, you know, 10 feet of regulations. And I kind of wanted to know who passed those regulations and when they were passed. And then you had mentioned that job bills are stalled in the Senate, and I just kind of wanted to find out what those job bills were.
Well, thank you for asking. Among the jobs bills that are sitting waiting to be heard in the Senate are the bills that, let me give you a total. The Reducing Regulatory Burdens Act. Now, that one reduces overlapping regulations on pesticides. That would reduce costs to farmers and small business owners. There's the Energy Tax Prevention Act. It prohibits the federal government from regulating greenhouse gas emissions. You know, they're now attempting to implement cap and trade through regulation rather than through legislation. So these are regulations that are being adopted by federal agencies of the Obama administration without the consent or approval of the U.S. Congress. We also have the regulation of internet and broadband providers. So we're disapproving the FCC's regulation. We're asking to restart the offshore leasing program now to help reduce energy prices and promote job creation by expediting offshore oil and gas exploration in the Gulf of Mexico and on the East Coast. Now, that is also passed. We have the Putting the Gulf of Mexico Back to Work Act that further reinstates oil drilling permits in the Gulf. We have a bill reversing the Offshore Moratorium Act. As you know, the Obama administration has reinstated the moratorium three times, twice after the courts reversed him. We have one to promote job growth and reduce energy costs to get onshore permitting. That passed in June. The Clean Water Cooperative Federalism Act would prevent the federal government from interfering with a state's water quality program once the state already has met federal standards. So that is trying to get rid of the additional red tape. We have more on my website. And we also have a photograph of this 9 feet of regulations on the website. And my website is www.lummis.house.gov. There is also a report of the Western Caucus, of which I'm the vice chairman. It is called the Western Jobs Frontier. There are 40 bills to create jobs now listed in that act, many of which have already passed the House and await action in the Senate. So these are just a few. There are others on utilities, on cement manufacturing plants, on boilers, and manufacturing is a huge area where we've lost jobs. In fact, according to the World Bank that surveyed nations, the United States has dropped from number 3 to number 13 in the world in terms of best places to do business, and that's in large part because of all these new regulations that have passed during the Obama administration. So please do check out lummis.house.gov for a more exhaustive list of these regulations. Now, let me tell you about the poll. We appreciate so many of you that have weighed in. At this point, we have a vote of 81% of the callers supporting a balanced budget amendment to the U.S. Constitution and 19% voting no. So I want to thank you kindly to all of you who voted. Now we'll be speaking with Dennis from Cody.
Hello.
Dennis, yeah. You're on the line. Hey, how are you?
Oh, good. My question is that we've had this problem with
conservation groups that are non-profit being able to sue our government with our tax dollars. Now, you had, as I recall, you had some bill that was in the, either to be passed or to be worked on to regulate that somewhat. Is that dead or is that still going on?
Well, it's still alive, Dennis, and I sure thank you for the opportunity to explain to the other folks on the line about the Equal Access to Justice Act, which is a great law. And we don't dispute the importance of people who have that once-in-a-lifetime claim against the federal government, being it for veterans' benefits or Social Security, from being able to recover their attorney's fees when they sue the federal government and win. But this law has been hijacked by, as you point out, some so-called environmental groups that are essentially nothing but litigation shops. And they sue the federal government on technicalities over and over again. And they recover their attorney's fees and then turn around and plow those attorney's fees back into suing the government on the next thing and the next thing. And it is the same groups repeatedly recovering money from the federal government, usually over technicalities like a missed deadline, and then even receiving and recovering attorney's fees if the federal agency settles with these groups. So this law has gone far beyond the legitimate purposes for which it was intended. Now, we had a hearing before a subcommittee of the House Judiciary Committee of our bill that would fix some of these problems with the act in October. And in fact, the Judiciary Committee is taking this bill up this Thursday. So we're really excited about the progress that's been made. We have great support from legitimate conservation groups, from hunting and sportsmen's groups, from commodity groups, and it's bipartisan and also bicameral. That bill is being carried in the Senate also by Wyoming Senator John Barrasso. So we're very hopeful that that bill will be on the floor of the House sometime during this Congress, and I thank you very much for raising that issue. Again, if you have a question or comment, please press zero. And now we're visiting with Dick from Thermopolis. Dick, you're on the line.
Well, hi there, Councilwoman. How are you today?
Good. How are you?
Hello. I'm right here.
Excellent. What do you have to say?
Well, I can you hear me now?
Yes. Can you hear me?
I can, as a matter of fact. First of all, I wanted to commend you on the job you're doing. I think you're doing a marvelous job, and I'm proud of you.
Thank you, Mary.
You are welcome. What I'd really like to complain about, though, is a rule, I think, by the Justice Department that forbids the reimportation into the United States of Grand M1 rifles. We won World War II with the Grand Rifle. And to not allow them to be returned to the U.S. so that they could be sold to citizens, I think is really dumb, especially when I can open up the National Rifleman and on page 3 of every issue I see, they're selling German Mausers. I don't quite see the difference. Somebody said it was because the Garand had been determined to be an assault weapon. Well, I think that's pretty silly. What did it do? It had about a 6-round magazine or something like that. I've forgotten now what it was. But that's not really an assault magazine or assault rifle in my book. And it seems like a dumb thing to do, and I wish somebody would do something about it.
Well, I love it that you asked this question because I led 44 of my colleagues, Democrats and Republicans, in writing to Secretary of State Hillary Clinton to ask her to reconsider her decision reversing the Obama administration's earlier approval of the importation and sale of those American-made M1 rifles and M1 carbines from South Korea. There's a lot of interest in those historical items among American gun collectors. And since that sale had been approved by the Reagan administration and again by the Obama administration in 2009, we were really disappointed when in 2010 the Obama administration reversed itself and decided to prevent those rifles from entering the country. So the State Department didn't respond to our letter. And until they do, I'm going to push the Collectible Firearms Protection Act. Now, that bill, that's a bill I'm sponsoring. We have over 120 co-sponsors. My bill would prevent the State Department from interfering with the importation of legal collectible firearms. The importation of collectible firearms is already regulated by the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, and these collectible firearms would still be treated like any other legal firearm. So we're pushing this bill, and as I said, we've got over 120 co-sponsors and have a lot of help from the Second Amendment Caucus. Now, that's a caucus that meets every month. It's a group of members of the House who are friends of the Second Amendment and our freedom to keep and bear arms. And this is one of the bills that they're helping us push from our office. So a lot of support so far for the bill. And you're so right, and I'm glad you knew about that issue, and I'll look forward to working with you on it. So we'll try to keep you posted on the progress of that bill. Thank you so much. Now, again, if you would like to visit with us, ask a question, please press 0. I also want, before we go forward with questions, to remind you that our website is Lummis, L-U-M-M-I-S, .house.gov. You can go to the website to catch up on what's happening here in Washington. You can email me there if you wish. You can sign up for future Teletown Halls. You can sign up for our newsletter. You can follow us on Twitter. My username on Twitter is Cynthia Lummis. That's all one word. Or on my Facebook page, it is just Cynthia Lummis. I also want to remind you about the offices that we have in state. Our office has 16 employees total. 8 of them are in Washington, 8 of them are in Wyoming. And we have 4 offices in Wyoming. One is in Cheyenne. We also have an office in Casper, one in Rock Springs, and one in Sheridan. Then we have several people who travel throughout the basin and on the western part of the state. So please don't hesitate to contact our offices. Their phone numbers are on the website, but I'll also give you those phone numbers before the end of this call. So thanks very much. Our next question is from Ed in Gillette. Hi, Ed.
Hi. Yes, I'm really kind of upset with our federal government, whether it's Republican, Democrat, or whoever, because I see a lack of statesmanship, which used to be predominant, where the two political parties could work out problems and work for the good of the majority of the people. And I don't see that happening anymore. If it's a Republican-sponsored bill, the Democrats all fight it, and vice versa. And I'm really, really tired of that. I see our middle class deteriorating. The rich companies are getting richer, and the middle class people are losing their status, and there's an inordinate amount of poor people in this nation. And I think it's time that we solve some of the problems of companies like General Electric never paying any taxes. And we're so hooked on trying to get energy independent that the energy companies kind of have free rein, especially in Wyoming, on their environmental cleanups and things that are being done. Look at the air qualities in parts of the state and the water deterioration of drinking water for some people in Pavilion and other places, and it's very frustrating to me, and I think it's time for somebody to step up and start being a statesman, stateswoman, whatever, and work for the good of the people, not for the good of the party. What's your comment on that?
Well, thank you for your call. I have been enormously frustrated with the lack of progress on the economic front. Now that our national debt has passed the size of our economy, it's way past time that we got serious about the situation that we are in. And that's why I joined with a group of 100 House members and 45 senators, a very bipartisan group that I've been working with for a couple years and that just is growing now in numbers, to ask this super committee to come up with $4 trillion minimum in terms of cuts in revenues. Look, when we've got $1.3 trillion per year in spending more than we take in every year, we can't let this problem continue to go down partisan lines. We can't have the Democrats spending and taxing, and the Republicans' response is to spend and borrow. Both parties are wrong. We need to cut spending. So I joined with a bipartisan bicameral group to ask the super committee to put everything on the table, look at everything, because I think that we're reaching a crisis from which we will have a much more difficult time returning. We have to be willing to address Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, food stamps, and school lunches. If you did away with absolutely everything the government spends money on except those programs, we still don't have enough money to pay for it each year with tax revenue. That is how much money we're spending on those entitlement programs. And we're borrowing 42 cents of every dollar we spend. We just can't, the number, it's simple math, the numbers don't add up. We cannot go on like this. If you did away with the entire discretionary part of government, that means the War on Terror, the Defense Department, the White House, the Congress, the Judiciary, Commerce, Energy, Education, Health, Human Services, Labor, every single federal agency. If you did away with all of them, we still don't bring in enough money to cover the money we're spending on the entitlement programs. We have to have entitlement reform, and we have to have new revenues because we don't have enough money to even cover the entitlement programs, let alone the rest of government. So that's why I support the strategy that we call Go Big, which means we need to cut spending and increase revenues by at least $4 trillion over 10 years. Otherwise, we are not addressing the systemic problems that our country has. We've got a cowboy up. That's the phrase I've used. And the enthusiasm for that strategy seems to be growing. So thanks very much for your call. Our next call is Mr. Sprouse from Crowheart.
Madam Congresswoman, you've addressed the questions tonight so succinctly and so appropriately on the national level, and we appreciate your hard work in the rural communities for our average Americans across Wyoming. This is a local question, but it's a regional and statewide question. As you know, we're losing 42 post offices, mostly in rural Wyoming. These post offices are the heart of communities and the heart of its citizens who are unable to communicate with local, regional, state, national opportunities for jobs and income and information without these post offices. And while the post office in general unfortunately loses quite a bit of money each year, it would seem to me that with more efficiency in the large cities of our country, that it is incumbent on the service itself to be provided to the average rural citizen in America as it has been provided since our, since Independence Day. And I know this gives you a painful feeling to see this happening to your citizens that you represent, but it seems that there's nothing that we can do in Wyoming in any direction to try to keep these very important community centers open, and we would appreciate any help or any guidance that you could give.
Well, first of all, thank you for your kind remarks. Secondly, I'll tell you, we've been really active in these postal service issues. We've had our in-state staff attending these meetings that the Postal Service has been having around the state with regard to potential closures. And I've written to Daryl Issa, who is the chairman of the Government Oversight Committee here in the House, who is overseeing the post offices. And you're right, they're losing money, but that's true whether they are rural or urban post offices. And in fact, when you look at closing those 40 post offices in Wyoming that you mentioned, it doesn't save enough money to make it worthwhile to close them all. It only saves about $200 million if you cut all of the rural post offices that are under consideration for closure around the country. And the total amount that the Postal Service is expected to lose going forward is about $9 billion. So I have asked Daryl Issa to look at closing some urban post offices and also to look at reducing the number of days of delivery to 5 or less. Now, when I was growing up, even in Laramie County outside of Cheyenne, we only got mail Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And I'll tell you, that's a heck of a lot better than losing your post office and your postal service delivery. What a lot of people around the country don't realize, and people here in Washington don't realize, is how poor our internet service is in many areas of the state, and certainly how poor cell service is in certain areas of the state. And so it's not like an urban area where there's an alternative for them to use, which is the internet or good solid cell phone service. People in Wyoming rely on mail delivery. We also know that in some instances, UPS contracts with the post office to deliver its packages to rural areas. We also know that many seniors throughout the state get prescription drugs through the mail that they need to have delivered to a network of rural post offices. So we've stayed very active in this debate. Now, the Daryl Issa's bill, that's the committee chairman, will limit rural closures to 10% of the total closures of post offices. Now, that's a very good sign. How many that will equate to in Wyoming is as yet unclear, but we continue to work with Daryl Issa on this subject very closely because it's something that I've been hearing a lot about lately. I've become very familiar with specific post offices around Wyoming that offer unique services to the people. And the way you I can't say it any better than you did during your remarks about post offices, about how important they are to these small rural areas. So thank you very much. Now we have John from Cheyenne on the line.
Well, it's wonderful, Cynthia, to talk to you, and I should say Representative Cynthia. My name is John Hayes. You might remember me.
I remember you, John, and it's always Cynthia for everyone on the line. I'm good with Cynthia.
Well, I know you are, because I've known you for a long time, and your dad is a good friend of mine, as is a lot of the other people who serve in our government, state and federal offices. But nevertheless, the first thing I wanted to do is I wanted to commend you on your talking to the University of Wyoming Future Farmers of America students. My daughter, her name is Christy Brewer, over there at University of Wyoming, couldn't see why FFA had to end in high school. And with her efforts and other efforts, they were able to carry it on beyond the normal high school age. And when you address them and talk to them about the things that they were achieving, the things they have achieved, I got to tell you, they were very impressed and appreciated the time that you took. And even to come after during that parade and talk to them again, I'll tell you, you just made a whole bunch of friends, and I said, it doesn't surprise me at all. So that being said, my question is, at the present time, we have before, I think it is the United States court, a decision to be made about Obama's forced insurance plan. And I was wondering if that should fall, in my estimation, in the wrong directions, where the courts would say that it's okay to make people buy health insurance. What is our recourse? Or do we have one?
Yeah, that's a great question. Thanks for your comments about FFA. As you may know, I was a 4-H kid who never outgrew 4-H. I loved it when I was all through junior high and high school and grade school, and those FFA kids just brighten my day. When I see those FFA jackets around Washington, D.C., you know, the navy blue corduroy jackets, I chase those kids down and thank them for being, you know, so actively involved in FFA. It's such a great program. Obamacare and the mandate. We absolutely have to repeal Obamacare. Its real name was the Affordable Care Act, and it is completely unaffordable. We know, because there are 22 new taxes in Obamacare most of which have not taken effect yet, totaling over $500 billion. And then, of course, the rest of it they were trying to pay for with cuts to Medicare. Well, if we're going to cut Medicare, we need to use the savings from Medicare to fix Medicare, not to create a whole new entitlement program that we can't afford. Now, healthcare still needs to be reformed even after we repeal Obamacare. So let's say the Supreme Court hears the arguments this spring. Let's say they have a decision by July, which is the current talk around Washington, D.C. And let's say, theoretically, that they uphold the individual mandate. We must then repeal the law. And, in fact, I think we need to repeal the law regardless of the Supreme Court's decision because we simply can't afford it. But we have to repeal it and replace it. And I continue to be an advocate for Mike Enzi's 10-point plan for health care. It expands health care coverage. It allows small businesses to buy health insurance across state lines. It allows for interstate shopping for health care. So it expands the pool of health care insurance providers that are available to Wyoming residents. It provides flexibility for states with regard to the way that Medicaid is administered, and that's just got to happen. You know, even the Democratic governor of Tennessee called the Medicaid portion of Obamacare the mother of all unfunded mandates, because the cost to the residents to states for expanding the Medicaid rolls is going to be astronomical. And then we need to equalize the tax treatment between big employers and individuals and small businesses with regard to the tax advantages of providing health insurance to their employees so that individuals and small businesses enjoy those same benefits. All those will reduce the costs, and we can use the savings for a tax credit for people that fall between Medicaid and affordable coverage. And then in addition, in Wyoming, we do have that high cost insurance pool for those that are high risk. So Mike Enzi put together a really comprehensive plan that I sure wish Congress would have adopted before we ever got about the idea of adopting Obamacare, because we cannot afford Obamacare. That sort of brings us up to one last question, and that is from Helen in Casper. Helen, you're on the line. Are you there, Helen?
Marie.
How about Marie? Marie, are you
yes.
there?
Yes, I am.
Well, good evening.
I'm right here.
How's it going tonight?
Well, not too good. I live with a daughter who's an accountant, and she's been out of a job for the past 2 years. So it's been really tight. But what I really wanted to talk about is, first of all, this $1.2 trillion over 10 years, I think that's an insult to the American people. That's nothing, really. It should be at least that much every year. And there are so many things that we see and read about out here that is just infuriating, the money that's being spent on them. For one thing, Obama has doubled the amount of limousines for his buddies, I suppose, back there. I don't think that was necessary. They put on about almost 200 people in the Department of Transportation, where there were 15 doing the job before. And so many things like that. But I do want to commend you on one thing. I've been thinking, why doesn't Congress cut your own budget? And you mentioned that Thursday morning when you were talking to Brian Scott on K2, that you are cutting yours. So thank you for that. But there's just a number of things. For instance, these so-called wild horses. Last year, they spent $40 million on pasture for a bunch of them. And now this coming year, they're going to spend more. They're planning on sending more back to the Midwest and the East to pasture. Sell them to the highest bidder, no strings attached. I don't think that I just cannot see spending money on them like that. And as for the oil line that Canadian company wanted to put through, there are already oil lines over that Ogallala aquifer. If people would do a little investigating, they would see that, what all is out there. And as far as I know, I have never heard of any accident in it. in any of those lines. Obama just seems as though he's trying to get rid of our oil industry. They denied, I believe it was Shell, a permit to drill along the north coast of Alaska after they'd spent $4 billion on it. He put that moratorium on drilling in the Gulf and along the coast. And so now all the drilling rigs have gone over to foreign countries. And this is just, I think it's stupid. There would be, that would create so many jobs and bring more money into the government. But the you keep, all I hear about cutting is defense, Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid, and those things. But there are so many other things that could be cut. Stop funding PBS radio and TV. And the arts. I don't think the government should have ever been in either one of those things. That's for the private individuals to do. Not to put it on the taxpayers.
You know, Marie, you're getting lots of kudos and high signs here in Washington as you talk. I agree with so many of the things you've said. Let me tell you what Tom Coburn has done. He's a senator from Oklahoma. He and Mike Enzi gathered up a whole bunch of government accounting office reports and just compiled the recommendations that the government's GAO put forward, and they came up with $900 billion worth of spending cuts every year that we're mostly consolidating programs that duplicate each other and where they've identified waste. They also recommended that the U.S. Department of Defense be audited. You know, the Department of Defense has never undergone a clean audit. And this is an industry, essentially, that would be the largest corporation in the world if it were a private business. These are all things we need to get our arms around. If we could cut $900 billion in spending just based on the Government Accounting Office reports, that gets us two-thirds of the way to eliminating our deficit. And as you know, since you were listening to Brian Scott last week, we did cut our budgets here in Washington. The budget of each member of Congress in the House side was cut 5% this year and will be cut 6.4% next year for a total of 11.4%. And we're all absorbing it. We're making it work. I can't think of a single federal agency that could not absorb an 11.4% increase. So I think it's ridiculous that we don't make everybody do something similar. Furthermore, if we want to get more specific, we just need to adopt those GAO reports. And that was some minor reforms to some of the entitlement programs would solve the problem. There's a couple of other bills that would solve the problem. One is the Paul Ryan budget that the House Republicans passed in March or April and that died in the Senate. Another one is a bill that Representative Connie Mack is carrying in the House and Mike Enzi is carrying in the Senate that would freeze all spending at current levels and then cut it 1% a year for 7 years. That eliminates the deficit. It doesn't eliminate the debt, but eliminates the deficit. I have a feeling you and that accountant daughter of yours must sit around and talk about this stuff because you're awfully well informed, Marie. And I find that to be true of so many of my constituents in Wyoming. That's why in Washington, when people talk about how we need to have an adult conversation with the American people, I think to myself, who's not having an adult conversation with their constituents? People in Wyoming are having those adult conversations all the time, all over the state. It happened last week, and it happens every time I come home. And as I expected, it happened yet again this evening. I always learn a lot by visiting with people in Wyoming. I am very proud to represent you in the U.S. House of Representatives. Let me give you, before I close, some of the phone numbers in our Wyoming offices that you can call if you have specific questions that weren't answered tonight that you would like to follow up on. In Cheyenne, 772-2595. In Casper, 261-6595. In Rock Springs, 362-4095. And in Sheridan, 673-4608. I'm so pleased that you would share this hour with us this evening. Thank you very much for the privilege of representing you. As I look at the score, it looks like 17-0, Green Bay. And so there's still plenty of football left to watch if you're interested. Thank you all so much, and have a good evening.
Okay, is that enough? In a couple of seconds, you'll have some people in conference.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Okay, you're on air.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Okay, then I'm going to be putting it on speakers. And if you're watching the game rather than listening to, I'm assuming you're still listening to me, so don't feel like I will view you as distracted if you're...